And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's April 27th. 117th day of the Gregorian calendar. 248 days remain until the end of the year. Hopefully we won't spend that 248 days on lockdown as we have been since March 10th, I think it is. Well, on this date in history, a lot of interesting things happened. 33 BC, Lucius Marcius Philippus, stepbrother of the future Emperor Augustus, celebrates a victory while serving as governor in one of the provinces of Hispania, which is what we know as Spain. 395 AD, Emperor Arcadius marries Aelia Eudoxia, daughter of the Frankish general Flavius Boto. She became one of the more powerful Roman empresses of what late antiquity. 629, Shahrbaraz is crowned as king of the Sasanian Empire. 711, Islamic conquest of Hispania. Moorish troops led by Tariq ibn Ziyad landed Gibraltar to begin their invasion of the Iberian Peninsula. 1296, First War of Scottish Independence. John Baliol's Scottish army is defeated by an English army commanded by John de Warenne, 6th Earl of Surrey, at the Battle of Dunbar. 1509, Pope Julius II places the Italian state of Venice under interdict. 1521, Battle of Mactan. Explorer Fernando Magellan's killed by natives in the Philippines, led by Chief Lapu-Lapu. 1521, combined forces of Spain and the Papal States defeat a French and Venetian army at the Battle of Bicocoa. 1539, refounding of the city of Bogota, New Granada, now Colombia, by Nicholas Federman and Sebastian de Belalcázar. 1565, Cebu's established among the first Spanish settlements in the Philippines. 1578, Duel of the Mignons claims the lives of two favorites of Henry III of France and two favorites of Henry I, Duke of Guise. 1595, the relics of St. Sava incinerated in Belgrade on the Vraka Plateau by Ottoman Grand Vizier Sinan Pasha. The site of that incineration is now the location of the Church of St. Sava. That's one of the largest Orthodox churches in the world. There's been more blood and misery caused by religion than almost any other cause. 1650, the Battle of Carbondale. Royalist army from Orkney invades mainland Scotland, was defeated by Covenanter army. 1667, blind and impoverished, John Milton sells Paradise Lost to a printer for £10. So it could be entered into the stationer's register. 1777, Battle of Ridgefield. British invasion force engages and defeats Continental Army regulars and militia irregulars at Ridgefield, Connecticut. 1805, United States Marines and the Berbers attack the Tripolitan city of Derna. That's where the Shores of Tripoli part of the Marines hymn came from. This was known as the First Barbary War. 1813, American troops capture York, the capital of Upper Canada, in the Battle of York. 1861, American President Abraham Lincoln suspends the writ of habeas corpus. 1865, the New York State Senate creates Cornell University as the state's land-grant institution. 1906, the State Duma of the Russian Empire meets for the first time. 1909, Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, Abdul Hamid II, is overthrown, succeeded by his brother, Mehmed V. 1911, following the resignation and death of William Fry, compromises reached to rotate the office of President pro temp in the U.S. Senate. 1627, Carabineros de Chile, the Chilean National Police Force and Gendarmerie are created. 1936, the United Auto Workers gain autonomy from the American Federation of Labor. 1941, German troops enter Athens. The Wehrmacht. Also in 1941, the Communist Party of Slovenia, the Slovene Christian Socialists, the left-wing Slovene Sokols, also known as the National Democrats, and a group of progressive intellectuals established the Liberation Front of the Slovene Nation. 1945, the last German formations withdraw from Finland to Norway. The Lapland War, and thus World War II in Finland, come to an end, and raising of the flag on the three-country claim, photograph is, three-country cairn, is taken. Also in 1945, the Benito Mussolini is arrested by Italian partisans in Dongo while attempting to escape, disguised as a German private. The Texas stay at, just got this news, the Texas stay-at-home order is to expire Thursday, April 30th. Businesses to reopen in phases beginning on Friday. 1953, Operation Moolah offers $50,000 to any pilot who defect with a fully mission-capable MiG-15 to South Korea. The first pilot was to receive $100,000. 1960, Togo gains independence from the French-administered UN trusteeship. 1961, Sierra Leone is granted its independence from the UK with Milton Margai as the first prime minister. 1967, Expo 67 officially opens in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, with a large opening ceremony broadcast around the world. Opens up to the public the next day. 1974, 10,000 march on Washington, D.C., calling for the impeachment of President Nixon. 1978, former U.S. President Nixon aide John Ehrlichman is released from the Arizona prison after serving 18 months for Watergate-related crimes. In 1978, the Tsar Revolution begins in Afghanistan, ending the following morning with the murder of Afghan President Mohammad Daoud Khan and the establishment of the Democratic Republic of Afghanistan. When they call themselves a Democratic Republic, it's usually communist-based, keep that in mind. 1981, Xerox PARC introduces the computer mouse. 1986, the city of Pripyat and surrounding areas are evacuated due to the Chernobyl disaster. That's when a nuclear plant went wild and couldn't be stopped. 1987, the U.S. Department of Justice bars Austrian President Kurt Waldheim and his wife Elizabeth, who had also been a Nazi, from entering the U.S., charging he'd aided in the deportation executions of thousands of Jews and others as a German army officer during World War II. That happened because a number of photographs showed up, which showed him in the uniform of a Wehrmacht officer. 1989, the April 27th demonstration, student-led protest, responding to the April 26th editorial during the Tiananmen Square protest of 1989. In 1992, the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, comprising Serbia and Montenegro, is proclaimed. 1992, Betty Boothroyd becomes the first woman to be elected Speaker of the British House of Commons in its 700-year history. That same year, 1992, the Russian Federation and 12 other former Soviet republics become members of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. 1993, most of the Zambia national football team used their lives in a plane crash off Libreville, Gabon, en route to Dakar, Senegal, to play in the 1994 FIFA World Cup qualifying match against Senegal. 1994, South African general election. The first democratic general election in South Africa in which black citizens could vote. The interim constitution came into force at that time as well. 2005, Airbus A380 aircraft has its maiden test flight. 2006, construction begins on the Freedom Tower, later renamed One World Trade Center in New York City. 2007, Estonian authorities remove the Bronze Soldier, Soviet Red Army War Memorial in Tallinn, and political controversy with Russia. 2007, Israeli archaeologists discovered the tomb of Herod the Great south of Jerusalem. 2011, The super outbreak of 2011 devastates parts of the southeast U.S., especially the states of Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and Tennessee. 205 tornadoes touched down on this date alone, killing more than 300 and injuring hundreds of others. 2012, at least four explosions hit the Ukrainian city of Dnipropetrovsk, with at least 27 people injured. 2018, the Panmunjom Declaration signed by the two Koreas, officially declaring their intentions to end the Korean conflict. Now, there have been dozens and dozens of prominent births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observations. Christian feast days of Antimus of Nicodemia, Asicus, Floribert of Liege, John of Constantinople, Liberalis of Treviso, Pollio, Raphael Arnaz Baron, Virgin of Montserrat, Zita, also Eastern Orthodox Liturgics, the Day of Russian Parliamentarianism in Russia, Day of the Uprising against the Occupying Forces in Slovenia, in Moldova, Flag Day, in South Africa, Freedom Day, Independence Day, celebrating the independence of Sierra Leone from the United Kingdom in 1961. Also, Independence Day, celebrating the independence of Togo from France in 1960. King's Day, in the Netherlands, Aruba, Curaçao, St. Martin, celebrated on April 26th, if April 27th falls on a Sunday. And in Finland, National Veterans Day. Certainly, we are looking at a lot of activity on this particular day in history. Yeah, let's see. We have been talking at length about the so-called Dark Fleet, which is said to be a secret space program, primarily Nazi created. It's believed that due to the unbelievable advances made by a Nazi scientist in the 30s, that they were actually able to build a base on the moon in the 40s. And if that's true, that does raise a lot of interesting points. Well, we've mentioned Vladimir Tuzinski before. He's a Bulgarian-born engineer and physicist. Graduated cum laude from the Master of Science program at Tokai University in Tokyo in 1980. Served as a solar energy researcher at the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences before emigrating to the U.S. in 1984. He's an international UFO researcher with a command of English, Japanese, Russian, German, and Bulgarian. He created and lectured at a Ufology 101 course for university-level attendance, probably at Tokai University in Tokyo. He obtained an MS degree there and became the president of the American Academy of Dissident Scientists. Well, in 1991, he came into possession of a German documentary film created in 1941 to describe the Nazi V-7 special weapons program. Now, the secret V-7 projects included circular aircraft research designs for the development of radical new weapons platforms that could rise and descend vertically and fly at supersonic speeds at very high altitudes using a new implosion motor design and other electrogravitic energy conversion principles to produce a self-sufficient electrostatic generated force for power. Now, these engines were manufactured by Allgemeine Elektrostatische Gesellschaft for this research program in 1944. And research along these lines have been carried out since 1941. Allgemein was the great wartime electrical giant of industrial Germany at the time. These engines generated their own electrogravitational field, which neutralized the Earth's gravity, a natural gravity, in effect making them weightless. And they were used to power the Hanabu anti-gravity disk, of which there were four models in the V-7 program, culminating in the largest model, the Hanabu 4. Allgemein also manufactured a different engine used for the smaller Vril models, of which there were seven. Then there was the mile-long cylindrical mothership carrier called the Andromeda, which is also anti-gravity. It was designed to transport the Hanabu and the Vril craft in flight, and then to be launched similar to scout craft. The first German trip to Mars originated in April of 1945 from Germany itself and not from Base 211 in Antarctica. That may have been because they just didn't have the technological resources to launch such a complicated mission from Base 211 at the time. And it was also a joint German-Japanese mission, and the Japanese weren't willing or able to send their people across the now very dangerous waters of the South Atlantic on this last month of the European War. On the other hand, the facilities to launch such a mission might have been in remote areas of Germany untouched by Allied bombing. And the Japanese members of the crew had probably trained there, and so they were stationed there already. Drzezinski says that the craft used for the journey was a special, larger version of the Hanabu 3, sometimes referred to as the Hanabu 4. The chosen model was 243 feet in diameter and could accommodate a crew of hundreds. It was powered by Andromeda tachyon electromagnographic engines. Now, the Andromeda craft is believed to have been a huge carrier craft over 100 feet in diameter designed to carry several Hanabu and Vril craft inside, similar to an aircraft carrier. Some say it only existed on a drawing board, but most likely the Andromeda Garrett engine was designed for that craft, which was only used on the Mars mission on the expanded Hanabu 3, which was clearly a one-way mission. Tachyons are particles that travel faster than light. It's believed that the tachyon engines have been developed in the secret space program, and these subliminal craft are being used by the Nazis on Mars and by the U.S. and the Solar Warden fleet. Arnold Sommerfeld, German scientist, is the probable designer. Now, the Andromeda had three inverted gun turrets on the bottom and one on the top. Early models of the Hanabu couldn't accommodate gun turrets because they interfered with the rotation of the craft, but evidently the engineers had solved that problem in 1945. Drzezinski claims that a large crew was necessary because electronic automation was still primitive at that time, and so all the controls had to be operated manually, just like on a submarine. But the life support operations were handled by small Kohler converters, which had been in use on the small Vril craft for several years. Drzezinski claims that the crew was all volunteer, and that was necessary because it was considered a suicide mission with a very low likelihood of returning to Earth. But the Germans knew there was a friendly indigenous population on Mars that was available to help the cosmonauts, and probably Drzezinski didn't have that information because it was considered highly classified by the Germans. So very likely it was planned the crew and passengers would remain on Mars to found a small human colony. That would explain why they sent so many passengers. Didn't seem to be any particular advantage, scientific or otherwise, to wasting millions of Reichsmark and sending hundreds of people to die on Mars. In fact, in all likelihood, one or more of the passengers may have been one of the invaders to facilitate communications upon arrival. The Earth invaders and the Martian invaders are related and friendly, although there is some friction with others, because there's more than one type of invaders, according to all the material. According to Drzezinski, the trip took 8 months because after escaping from Earth's gravitational pull, they turned off the tachyon engines and basically coasted the rest of the way. He said if they had continued at full power, the trip would only have taken 2 or 3 days. Now, that seems hard to believe, but we really don't know anything about these particular engines. They would have had to have been superluminal. And it's possible the ship went through a wormhole, perhaps an Einstein-Rosen bridge. They crash-landed on Mars and damaged the engines, which made a return flight impossible anyway. But since they had come prepared to stay, the colony was officially started in mid-January of 1946. Had they come back, they would have come back to a defeated Germany and Japan. And so they were probably better off where they were at. Now, the colony, according to all reports, grew rapidly through the 40s and 50s, supplied with highly sophisticated construction equipment carried by Hanabu 2 craft. These trips originated from Base 211 and from Argentina. And this fact alone calls into question the original belief that the journey was a suicide mission. By 1975, the colony had become a huge facility known as Ares Prime, about 90% of which is underground. Now, the name is appropriate since Mars is the astrological ruler of Ares, and the Germans were very much into astrology. Ares Prime facility incorporates some amazing technologies to become the grand central station of the German presence on Mars. There are said to be three separate bases that are connected underground. Base 1 is used mainly for receiving food and medical supplies and storing spare parts for the spacecraft. Most of the spare parts are used on Earth at Base 211, and the food comes mainly from Earth. This has promoted heavy traffic between Earth and Mars, possibly even daily trips. It's a massive facility that can accommodate huge interstellar and intergalactic ships in a protected underground facility. It's reported that ships constantly come and go, and sometimes there may be up to three ships docked there at one time. Bases has 20 ships of its own. As of the late 90s, there are said to be 100 humans, 350 hybrids, and 30 ETs living and working there. The official language is, of course, High German, although there are other dialects that are in use. Since there's heavy trade and commercial activity there from over the galaxy, the base has a hospitality function. It is designed to welcome and accommodate visitors from across the galaxy. But there are strict classified levels, and a need-to-know basis prevails throughout. There's underground water, so they can grow food there using hydroponics. They can keep and propagate a large animal population. There's a hospital where, and there's a psychiatric ward that uses very advanced psionic technology, including the ability to implant and remove memories. This keeps everybody in line and reduces any possibility of revolt. Base 2 is the nerve center of the facility. This is where worldwide information is gathered and coordinated and applied to situations as it developed. It might be said that this is the combined CIA-FBI of the entire German operation on Mars. Consequently, it supersedes the moon operations, and directions and orders for the LOC originate here. Needless to say, this is very high tech, so there's where the smartest people are found. Base 3 is a combined educational and training center. Orders come out from here, usually through the Mars Internet, which is used for computer face-to-face sessions. Some training and implantation takes place on site, while in other cases, trainers and instructors travel to bases on Earth and the Moon. Now, the first U.S. mission to Mars landed on the Martian surface, according to reports and a video I saw when I was in England on May 22, 1962. A video of this landing does exist, and it can be viewed online. It was supposedly an unmanned craft, but the view out the wonders of the spacecraft and the accompanying comments and cheers by the crew and their surprised exclamations when they see small creatures burrowing into the Martian soil definitely seem to be coming from on board the craft. Of course, they could have been coming through an intercom from Base 211, but that would mean that the view of Mars through the spacecraft windows is being televised and sent in real time to the war room at Base 211, and the personnel there are responding with cheers, also in real time. And all this was being recorded on tape in the craft. Somewhat unlikely technical scenario for 1962. Everything points to the fact that it was a manned mission, and And information I was given when I saw the video was that it was a manned mission. Now, this was a top secret mission and has not been referenced in any NASA documentation as far as we know. Would it remain top secret if this video hadn't been downloaded recently? Actually, the information that there were small burrowing creatures on the surface of Mars was confirmed in 2018 by a comment made by this ex-super soldier, Captain Randy Kramer, who says he spent 17 years on Mars in one of his public talks. Superficially, at least, there doesn't appear to be any involvement of Wernher von Braun in this mission to Mars. On the date of the landing, May 22, 1962, there was mention in the video that von Braun had only recently, in 1960, become the director of the Marshall Space Flight Center, which was the central facility of NASA in Huntsville, Alabama, and he was immediately caught up in the Kennedys' determination to put a man on the moon in 7 years. He came to the U.S. in 1945 as part of Operation Paperclip. In fact, he came along with his German Paperclip rocket team, which had been initially confined to the U.S. Army base at Fort Bliss, Texas. While there and able to leave the base out of military escort, he instructed military and scientific personnel in the principles of rocketry while his team worked on rehabilitating V-2 rocket ship from Germany, and he was involved in testing them at the nearby White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. He remained at Fort Bliss for about 5 years, till about 1950, but strangely, it was while he was there he wrote his book, The Mars Project, which was published in German in 1952. Everything needed, all the science, mathematics, and technology for a mission to Mars was laid out in that book. It was a blueprint of how to go to Mars. This was 7 years after the German aerospace scientist in Antarctica had already succeeded in sending a manned mission to Mars. Now, it's unlikely von Braun had any role in that 1945 mission. He'd only recently arrived in the U.S. and was confined at Bliss. And it's highly unlikely the 1962 mission used the Hanabu 3 or 4, which was probably launched from Base 211. I'm sorry, it's very likely that the 1962 mission did use Hanabu 3 and 4. It just didn't have the rocket power for the trip at that early date, whereas von Braun's book was based entirely on the use of rocketry. They would have needed the heavy lifting of the Saturn V, which wasn't ready till 1967. His book describes a very impractical plan for a rocket trip to and from Mars, and we know that a joint U.S.-Soviet mission went to Mars in 1964, and that a base was established there. So von Braun, it appears, was out of that particular loop as well. In the preface to the English language edition of his book, he speculated that a workable round trip to Mars wouldn't be possible until probably 1977. In retrospect, it seems highly unlikely that the rocket engineers and scientists in Antarctica didn't know that Germany's preeminent rocket scientist was on American soil in Texas, especially since they were consorting with American aerospace engineers at Base 211. It appears the Nazi plan was to allow von Braun to go through the paperclip process and to give him influence with the U.S. space program while staying in touch with him. It was known that there was a very effective intelligence operation based out of Juarez that brought information from all the paperclip scientists in the U.S. to Juarez, and from there it went to probably Base 211. There was indeed a line of communication between them that might explain von Braun's book. And that would explain why it was written in German. It means they probably helped him write the book in order to impress his American associates. And then as director of NASA beginning in 1960, von Braun was in a position to secretly plan and monitor an American mission himself. By now being fully informed about the Hanabu and anti-gravity technology by his Antarctic associates. The U.S. moon landing was still 7 years in the future, and the Saturn V rocket, first used in 1967, didn't exist yet. That means that U.S. scientists would have had to use much less powerful rocketry for the Mars mission. Without the heavy lifting capability of the Saturn V, it's doubtful they would ever reach Mars with a human crew in any acceptable time frame. Mission might take about 2 years one way. We don't really know when they departed Earth, but even if it was in 1960, no rocket-powered spaceship existed that could make that trip, land safely on Mars, and then return to Earth. Now, it is interesting to note, in 1958, Project Horizon got underway, which was for the building of a manned U.S. Army base on the moon to be staffed by 16 people permanently. Since there was no rocket-powered spaceship at that time, that leaves only one conclusion. The American mission used a Hanabu 3 or a Hanabu 4 spacecraft and promptly departed from base 211 in 61 or 62. Von Braun may have possibly been involved in the planning, since that mission has remained top secret. It hadn't been necessary to reveal the existence of anti-gravity spaceships. It means that there was active cooperation between the U.S. and German aerospace companies. And none of this is surprising now that we know that the German-American technical cooperation in Antarctica began in 1955. In 50, at the outset of the Korean War, von Braun and his team were moved to the Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, Alabama, where he became director of development for the Army Ballistic Missile Agency. This allowed him to travel freely to Argentina and Antarctica whenever he wished, so he may have played a consulting role in the 1962 mission. His main job at NASA now was to keep the American space program slowed down to a crawl, allowing only occasional triumphs like the moon landing, while real progress would be made at Base 211, where traffic throughout the solar system was proceeding at a lightning pace. In fact, by the time he took over NASA in 1960, the LOC was well developed, and the Mars bases were sending spaceships to the asteroids and the moons of Saturn. It was said that human colonies already existed on Ceres, Phobos, and Titan. The Dark Fleet was now immersed in protecting and facilitating profitable mining operations at these places while operating from their headquarters on the dark side of the moon, trading with a rapidly expanding extraterrestrial clientele and using a population derived from abductions on Earth. As the space program at Base 211 in Antarctica developed in the 40s and 50s, there was more and more secret missions to the moon and Mars for various purposes. So the bases in both places expanded correspondingly. LOC became a large facility, able to handle traffic from all over the galaxy, including to and from Mars and Earth. This growth was supervised and controlled by the Dark Fleet. From their base on the dark side of the moon, they essentially became the police force for traffic in the solar system, which meant they maintained a close working relationship with the invaders who kept them supplied with the latest technology and weaponry. In fact, they accompanied and joined in invader missions of conquest and exploitation even beyond the solar system. It's likely the Dark Fleet was originally staffed with ex-Nazi soldiers who came through the rat lines to Argentina and Antarctica on the large milk cow submarines that disappeared from Germany. It's known that Himmler took trips to ensure that all, took steps to ensure that all the immigrants to Antarctica were of pure Aryan descent, and consequently, German military was a major source of personnel since it had all been genetically checked out, so to speak. These men constituted an Antarctic defense force, and was almost certainly from these ranks the Dark Fleet pilots were taken and trained. Almost all the abductees who had any contact with the Dark Fleet said they all had a Nazi aspect. Corey Good says that they all wore black uniforms, were severe in character and attitude, and capable of killing or inflicting merciless treatment, all very reminiscent of the early Nazis who committed atrocities. In answer to a question from Michael Sala, Good said it's true the Dark Fleet personnel had been called stormtroopers and space Nazis because both in the way they act, dress, and the symbols they wear, as well as the shape of their vessels. They're very dark individuals who work alongside the invader vessels, mostly outside the solar system, helping them in offensive activities against enemies of the alien joint federation. According to James Bartley, the ongoing interaction between humans within the deep black world of the intelligence security apparatus and the aerospace community with non-human intelligence has an occult basis that was thousands, if not millions, of years in the making. There was nothing new about humans interacting with and working for non-humans. It's been going on for eons. After the successful 1962 mission to Mars and the establishment of the joint United States-Soviet Union base in 1964, traffic increased from Earth. Ares Prime wasn't yet founded, but German bases were begun all over the planet in what appeared to be a connected, very organized fashion, clearly under some sort of central authority. This authority can't be identified, but it's clearly under Nazi control, and it could have been the Bavarian Illuminati. Hitler's influence was fading, especially among the German scientists and engineers, but Bormann was still very much a Nazi, and he was clearly in control. Now in Argentina and yielding financial control, Bormann was taking over the leadership. Also, the Vatican was very much in the picture. At some point in the early 60s, with von Braun now installed as director of NASA, was decided to relocate the entire corporation from Base 211 to Mars, which was a much more suitable central location for the now busy traffic in the solar system. A skeletal corporate park remained in Antarctica, since the American Aerospace Corporations, although infiltrated by German scientist technicians, had taken over what became known as the secret space program. So because of the preponderance of American corporate employees, English became the language of choice, spoken across the board, and American culture now prevailed throughout Base 211. With von Braun at NASA and Kammler, the chief military authority in Antarctica, the Germans, especially the Nazis, wanted their own German-speaking technology facility. Mars was, like the Old West, a lawless territory, and offered the Germans a location for a scientific headquarters of their very own. Since the Nazi-dominated Dark Fleet already controlled the moon through LOC, a German technological center on Mars was needed to support their scientific operations. The new base on Mars was given the name of the Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate, or the ICC. Most of the Base 211 corporations opened a facility at the ICC, and German became the official language. It was kind of a Martian version of Silicon Valley, although vastly more advanced, especially in the biosciences. The main ICC base on Mars was constructed in the Southern Hemisphere by the companies participating in the base at Antarctica. Some of these corporations intended to keep their main corporate facilities on Mars, and some were contractors. Some of the main participants in building the first base were a mix of American and German corporations, including TRW, North American, Philco, Lockheed Martin, Douglas Aircraft Company, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman Space Technology, NASA, JPL Planetary Resources, Boeing, Astro, UND, Fairwerk Technik, Adelshoff, Advanced Space Technologies, Gina Optronic. Taken together, they constituted the ICC. Now, all this information came from Ilana, the star traveler, who worked with the ICC for 50 years and then was age regressed back to her life on Earth as a teenager. She claims that it all comes from her memory, which is rather astounding, I have to say. She went on to say that these are aerospace contractors that contributed to the various military bids to build out bases, as well as the orbital space platforms near Mars. Some of these contractors are fairly briefed on what exactly the work is that they do, and other smaller contractors are on a need-to-know basis doing the work, but not told what the manufacturing parts go in space or to whom. There are permanent shareholder companies which contribute financial and technical support to various ICC committees and councils. The propulsion manufacturers are Ad Astra Rocket Company from the United States, which provides advanced plasma rocket propulsion technology. AE Aerospace from the UK, which provides hybrid ion rocket engines. And Luftwaffe Aeronautics from Germany, providing advanced flight propulsion systems and spaceship and space station design. Major shareholder companies are the Allianz, German, Amerisource Bergen, American, Aviva, British, Bayer AG, German, Biogen, American, Boeing, American, Daimler, Germany, ExxonMobil, American, General Dynamics, American, Gilead Sciences, American, GlaxoSmithKline, British, J.P. Morgan Chase, American, Lockheed Martin, American, JPL, American, Merck, American, Monsanto, American, now acquired by Bayer, Kroger, American, Pfizer, American, Rand Corporation, American, Siemens, Germany, Syngenta, Swiss, Telex, German. There's some major pharmaceutical companies on this list, of course, which suggests the importance of drugs to the ICC operations. ICC has constructed four large space station satellites around Mars that were designed by von Braun. They house small human communities and are used to monitor all physical and communication traffic to and from the Red Planet. Allied with Dark Fleet warplanes, they're also used to keep out whoever the ICC pleases and make sure that Mars remains what amounts to a Teutonic planet. So the Fourth Reich came into existence. It wasn't only international, but it's now interplanetary. With the founding of Ares Prime in 75 and the rapid advancement of the ICC in the 80s, Mars has now become a completely German planet and a home of the Fourth Reich. They've made Ares Prime into a capital city, and their range has spread out to 10 other smaller subordinate cities, dotting the landscape, but firmly under their control. The Dark Fleet base on the moon became their version of the Pentagon. That base possesses awesome technology and weaponry, including nuclear and an air force capable of destroying any opposition in the solar system, including the United States. Supported completely by their powerful allies, the invaders, who have even more advanced technology, they roam the galaxy jointly conquering and controlling other civilizations. And with their nuclear weapons capability, they actually now have the capability of destroying a planet. According to the ex-super soldier, Randy Kramer, the Germans have a large military contingent quartered on Mars, possessing weaponry that's comparable to anything that can be found in any of the sci-fi comic books. While preferring mainly Aryan Nazi soldiers, they also have the ability to abduct selected individuals from any country on Earth and elsewhere to boost their ranks and train them as super soldiers in the military command of Nazi officers. This has evolved into a military defense force, which basically exists to protect the Martian commercial operations in the ICC. The German Martian pioneers had to deal with two indigenous populations. There was an invader colony on Mars that wasn't connected with the main invading force. Kramer calls them Reptoids, and after many years on Mars and being held in captivity in their colony for 6 months, he came to admire them. He said they were basically peaceful, but could field a fierce fighting force. These native entities view the invaders as invaders, and they fought battles with them, in which quite often they won. And there's a race of so-called insectoids on Mars. They resemble insects on Earth, having four arms, two with pinchers, but are generally over 6 feet in height. Highly intelligent and basically peaceful, but very organized militarily. These could have been the ant people spoken of by the Hopis, who claimed that they helped by them in an underground colony in Arizona. Kramer says that three colonies exist on Mars in sort of a military standoff with occasional flare-ups. He says that he's one of the few survivors of an underground confrontation between the military defense force and the Reptoids, in which 1,000 humans was killed. Elena, born as Elena Kopelnik in the Ukraine in 1985, was abducted as a child and taken to Mars. She now calls herself Elena the Star Traveler. Only 2 years old when first abducted, she was trained as a language specialist, ultimately act in the role of a translator of the bewildering diversity of human and extraterrestrial languages represented on Mars. Recently, according to her, age regressed back to a teenager and returned to Earth. She now speaks out as she remembers her experiences on Mars. She has near total recall of her 60 years working for the ICC. As she slowly recovered her memory, she's learned a lot about herself. For instance, when her father started visiting a gun shop, bringing home weapons, she discovered she could handle knives and axes and was a sharpshooter with a pistol and rifle. These weren't normally the skills of a suburban teenage girl. She claims the ICC has grown to a massive size and becomes the dominant force in the solar system. Now supported by the Dark Fleet, it controls all extraterrestrial traffic in and out of Mars airspace. It's an amazing testament to the efficiency of the German Martian genetic testing laboratories to have identified Elena's potential language capability at the age of 2 so that they could build on that ability through special training. Some of the other abductees have shown that German scientists have access to the soul records of abductees and can tell when they'll be capable of as adults. Elena spent almost all her time on Mars working in the cybernetics lab, which is part of the ICC, and she now speaks of the astounding feats of the laboratory and what it was able to accomplish. The main work of the cybernetics laboratory is the creation of cyborgs. These are humans who have been modified by the integration of psionic and electronic physical and neurological implants in their bodies and brains to create super soldiers to become virtual robotic slaves. She says the ICC has developed very lucrative trade in cyborgs throughout the galaxy. They're a valuable commodity for civilizations trying to develop instant armed forces. According to Cora Good, the ICC trades with over 900 extraterrestrial civilizations. It is to say the German scientists have no concern for any suffering the human soul and a cyborg might experience. They are, after all, Nazis. Ilana says that multiple cyborgs can be created to look identical, or they can be given any design or physical characteristics the scientist proves. They can be made to look identical to a living person in every detail, including eye color, the shape of the nose, hair color, voice, height, weight. This is done through nanotechnology. And nanotechnology is now being used by the scientists at the Cybernetics Laboratory extensively. It was originally conceived by American physicist Richard Feynman in 1959 at the California Institute of Technology, Caltech. But it couldn't be put into practice given the science at that time. It involves conducting science and technology applications in nanometers, which permits the direct manipulation of atoms and molecules. One nanometer is a billionth of a meter, so there are 25,400,000 nanometers in 1 inch. 1970, Professor Norio Taniguchi at Tokyo University of Technology coined the term nanotechnology, and then the advent of the scanning tunneling microscope in 1981, and later the atomic force microscope made it possible to use nanotechnology for scientific applications. System technology makes it possible to achieve such fine distinctions in cyborg technology. Its uses was developed by the German scientists at the ICC by reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology. It's got a number of applications in intelligence operations, as you might guess. The ICC scientists and physicians are routinely using medical techniques that have been considered miraculous here on Earth. Kramer claims he lost limbs in battle that were restored in a regeneration tank in a matter of days, sometimes hours. These tanks literally regrow the missing limb. Kramer says his foot was bitten off by an insectoid soldier to prevent him from walking, but he was rescued and the foot was restored at a hospital. Says his limbs have been restored several times over the course of his 17-year enlistment. Others, including Penny Badney and James Rink, have also spoken of the regeneration tanks. Christian biblical scholars have been astounded to learn that resurrection of the dead is a common procedure on Mars. It can only be employed under certain ideal conditions, though, but it works by dialing certain settings in a regeneration tank. Bradley claims she initially took comfort in the knowledge she could escape from intolerable situations by allowing herself to be killed, but after being returned to full consciousness several times, she finally realized death wasn't an answer. So she resigned herself to just following orders, became numb to her situation, and reluctantly remained alive. The ICC also has said to cheat death in other ways. They've developed life extension biotechnology and can keep humans alive past the age of 100. We also learned from Elena that the ICC scientists have developed so-called smart suits. They protect the wearer from bullets and electromagnetic directed energy weapons. Nanotechnology is built into the suit, so when the suit is turned on, the wearer can amplify his or her agility and running speed, walk through walls, levitate, communicate with computers, and create invisibility through a cloaking device. A food and nutrient supply is built in, and waste products are automatically broken down and they disappear. The suit also balances the oxygen levels in the body. The helmet can teleport the wearer anywhere on the planet by entering the coordinates, and same way we do now through Google Maps, except you're physically moved there. Can also be set for space flight to another planet. Helmet dematerializes or rematerializes the body through nanotechnology, just like on Star Trek. Helmet also has the ability to enhance thought and interact with computers so that it becomes possible to fly a spaceship just by thinking. All accomplished by reverse engineering nanotechnology. Scientists can create virtual reality scenarios complete with voices and physicality for training purposes are so realistic they're indistinguishable from real experiences. And the virtual experiences create new memory engrams so they can be remembered as real experiences. This virtual reality technology is also used to set up group meetings with people on other planets. Don't have to use a cell phone. Technology is also used to inflict virtual torture on captives to elicit information. Now, according to Elena, real torture is also frequently used by the Nazis to obtain information, just as with the Gestapo. Just as on Earth, the Nazi mentality is the same. She says they don't hesitate to torture, maim, kill, even children. They do whatever it needs to be done to get the job accomplished. They commonly use blackmail that's based on their comprehensive personal computer records on everybody. The Nazis create and sell sex slaves to other civilizations. And these abuses are used just to get cooperation for their missions. When necessary, they will turn slaves into cyborgs just to be able to sell them off-planet. So it seems that the interplanetary apple didn't fall all that far from the earthly tree. Or maybe the fascist movement in the 40s originated elsewhere in the solar system. Certainly the widespread pedophilia phenomena being revealed lately on Earth does seem to have originated with a different species. It's hard to think real human beings torturing and abusing children. In a later interview, Elena said the Dark Fleet has developed amazing technology that allows them to enter a jump gate from their fighter aircraft. In other words, the pilot can press a button and enter a portal that takes the craft and its occupants to a distant planet. And this is truly remarkable. It brings to mind scenes in Star Wars where the pilot has that capability. Now, Star Wars premiered in 1977, which would mean that George Lucas knew about jump gates, maybe in the early 70s. And Lucas has been suspected of obtaining information from a secret source. And it's been discussed on a number of occasions in a number of books. According to Philip K. Dick, he claimed to have been in contact with the Black Knight, which is the mysterious satellite that is said to orbit the Earth. It was there when we went into space. We've yet to be able to determine how to get on board it, is my understanding. Maybe the most amazing feat developed performed by the ICC scientists is age regression. Now, they can abduct individuals of any age, take them off planet, and force them to live for years under their control, and employ them to do specific jobs based on an agreed-to contract. The abductee will continue to age normally for those years. When the contract period is ended, they would blank slate the person's memory so it would all be forgotten, and then regress the individual back to the moment when the contract was signed. At that point, according to the story, the abductee would once again assume his or her original age at that moment in time. Anybody around him or her would notice any change in age or demeanor. That person would just resume his or her life in that younger mind and body, just as if that time spent on planet never happened. And this is said to be done routinely by the German ICC scientist. But the memories do persist. And in many cases, they resurface and the missing time stories are revealed. The most common version of this is the 20 and back program, which is mostly used with super soldiers. The enlistees are frequently already in the military to start with and given the opportunity to refuse the contract. This was the case with James Relfe, Kevin Tremmel, and others are now coming forward. But in other cases, the time served can be longer. Bradley was taken for 55 years. And in some cases, such as with Tony Rodriguez, it's forced labor and a form of slavery. In any case, it's time wasted because even if the abductees are taught a new skill, those skills can't really be applied after the person's return because the memories are blank slated. So while the person may be left with unconscious new skills, the experiences can't be put on a resume. Every once in a while, the movie is released that it portrays an entire top secret scenario masquerading as fiction. This was the case with Close Encounters of the Third Kind, written and directed by Steven Spielberg. In that film, 12 military men are portrayed in armed jump uniforms waiting on board an alien craft to travel to the alien planet. The event in question was above top secret. Apparently, the whole story had been given to Spielberg by somebody in the Defense Intelligence Agency, and he wrote the entire screenplay in one weekend at the Sherry Netherland Hotel in Manhattan, which means he was working off a secret document of some type, since most screenplays require several months to develop. Another one is Total Recall, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sharon Stone, released in 1990. It's a similar case, based on a 1966 short story written by Philip K. Dick, titled We Can Remember It For You Wholesale. So many of Dick's novels and short stories have been prophetic and made into films that one would have to say that he appeared in to have some sort of subconscious pipeline to actual secret and future events. Among those are Paycheck, Minority Report, Blade Runner, Radio Flea Albemuth, Screamers, and A Scanner Darkly, as well as the television series The Man in the High Castle. But his life was so short and unreal, married 5 times, 3 children, 40 novels, and a great many short stories, and dead at 53, that this type of brilliant mental chaos would indicate there's something else operating in his psyche. He was probably getting his ideas from some type of psychic or intuitive insights. In 1966, who would have believed the selected memories can be easily wiped from the mind by corporate memory experts, and that a slate of fictional but apparently totally believable memories could be implanted to function as a pretend vacation trip? Certainly, anybody who went to see Total Recall in 1990 wouldn't have believed it was possible. The audience viewed the movie as highly entertaining, but a total fantasy. And further, who would have then believed that there was a sizable human city underground on Mars, built down there because the surface air was too thin to breathe? City that was run as a profitable corporate enterprise, mining valuable minerals and shipping them all over the galaxy. Or that there was frequent human tourism to Mars. Or that taxicabs in the Martian city were self-driving, although they seemed to be driven by human mannequins that could converse intelligently with the passengers. Well, it's sad that all that and more is happening on Mars right now. And we do already have self-driven cars here on Earth, although they haven't yet put mannequins behind the wheel. That would make sense, just to pacify other drivers who might panic if they happen to pass a car that didn't have a driver. There was a book called The Secret History of Extraterrestrials, where a chapter was written about a man named Andy Pero, born in 1969. He was one of the earliest super soldiers. That chapter was written in 2005, and the book was published in 2010. Pero, a superb, natural, multi-talented athlete, was trained by his controllers to jump out of airplanes without a parachute. He'd lay on the ground unconscious for about an hour and then get up and walk away. He was trained to be an assassin by the Illuminati, but he finally rebelled and sought counseling after completing somewhere around 10 missions. Since that time, the Super Soldier program has expanded, although nobody really knows how many of them are walking around right now. But several others have overcome their suppressed memories and recalled the details of their training and their missions. Several of them were trained for conventional warfare roles and attached to military units on Earth and elsewhere in the solar system. Wouldn't be surprising to find in numbers in such highly specialized units as Navy SEALs, but mostly their talents seem to be prized for covert assignments, frequently for assassinations. Regardless of where they end up, in almost every case they're working for the Illuminati one way or the other, and that's why they're all subjected to MK-Ultra mind control techniques. Well, Pero's life was threatened several times after he went public. But ultimately, they found that they had succeeded too well in creating a Frankenstein, as he estimated he had to kill 15 of his handlers before finally getting out of the program. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. We'll talk more about this dark fleet and its various aspects tomorrow night, when once again you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, have a truly great evening.